Welcome to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast, number 11. Para Español, marque el número dos. Yes, that is new opening music. Told you there were going to be some changes around here. That's the intro to the Matt Mango tune, Our Love is Fading Away, and is currently set to be the lead-in music for my forthcoming patio book, Dirk Moonfire and the Nefarious Spacewoman, which, yes, after some delays, is in edit mode now, and I hope to have it out soon at patiobooks.com. Who am I? I am the one Orgasmatron, a.k.a. Jack Mangan. This week on The Deadpan, we are honored to have one of the most talented guitar players of all time, Jennifer Batten. You may even recall she had the towering shock of bleach blonde hair back in the Michael Jackson video for Dirty Diana. But she's one of the most talented guitar players I've ever seen, and quite probably the most skilled at finger tapping of any guitar player I've ever seen. We also have lots of content from you. So let's stop horsing around and get right to it.
This is Raven Crescent, author of Predator Turned Prey, and you are listening to Jack Mangan's The Deadpan.
Jack mauled her. A man's man, and yet no man's man. But always his own man. He kicks asses and takes names, mostly of extraterrestrials, what he likes to call extra tees, and knows all the motel night clerks. Hard drinking, warrior poet, a man with a past, our hero and guide through the Ex-Wife Files. You can find the Ex-Wife Files at patiobooks.com.
So I guess I can blame the Dragon Page pool party and possibly the vast quantities of alcohol, but I'm a little bit behind. I'm recording this, Deadpan number 11, I'm recording this extra stuff on Tuesday, June 13th. As of right now, the post at www.jackmangan.com for Deadpan number 10, which featured Mer Lafferty as the guest, that has 610 comments. I'm going to respond now to each one of those in turn. No, I'm not. But wow, you guys are awesome. I'm in awe of you. 610 comments, my God. Update. A few hours later, that number's now at 623. Another update. The next day, as I'm about to post this episode, there are 807 comments. As you're listening to it, it's undoubtedly higher. Let's see if we can top that this week. I also need to thank those who saw fit to donate money to the Deadpan cause. Thank you so much to everyone who's contributed in the past, and also to David, who is our most recent contributor. So I'm not even sure what it's time for. Oh, right. Well, it's time for Stolen Rap Hip-Hop Lines. Not read by me this week, but by the lovely and talented... Oh, well, she'll announce her name. Just listen.
Hey, Jack. This is Danny in NC. I'm contributing a stolen rap lyric for your collection. My choice today is Just a Little Bit by 50 Cent. Here you go. All I really need is a little bit. Not a lot, baby girl, just a little bit. We can head to the crib in a little bit. I can show you how I live in a little bit. I wanna unbutton your pants just a little bit. Take them off and pull them down just a little bit. Get to kissing and touching a little bit. Get to licking and Well, I think you get the picture, Jack. Bye now.
Hello, this is Amy with another dumbass memory. This one is more recent. In late March of 2006, I was in one of the dining commons at my university when I saw someone wearing a bright blue t-shirt with the words, "You down with OPP?" on the front in big white Comic Sans MS letters. Later, I got a look at the back of the shirt, and it said, "Open People's Party. University of California. Our door is always open." This was the campaign t-shirt for one of the parties in our upcoming student government election. I saw them all the time over the next few weeks. Then, in June, when the election was long over, I listened to episode 9 of this podcast. I heard the Brooklyn Blues Man's deadpan smorgasbord and went, "Oh, my gosh." Those t-shirts had a whole other layer of meaning that I didn't even know about until now. I am so unhip. Thank you, Mark Forman, for broadening my knowledge. This has been Dumbass Memories.
Thanks to the lovely and talented Amy Bowen for sharing that dumbass memory. Yes, Mark Forman is quite the educator. He actually has another lesson for us coming up later on in the podcast. But first, an unrelated thought. So you remember the beautiful love scene in the movie Ghost, where dead Patrick Swayze comes back and possesses Whoopi Goldberg's body, and then we see Demi Moore kissing Patrick Swayze? So they can have one final time together to get their freak on, while that Righteous Brothers song is playing in the background? Well, okay, great, beautiful. But you need to remember, it wasn't really Patrick Swayze there. He was in Whoopi Goldberg's body. Forget what you saw on screen. You really had Demi Moore making out and getting it on with Whoopi Goldberg. Talk about dirty dancing. I don't even know what that means. But anyway, the imagery of Demi Moore and Whoopi Goldberg is just so twisted, so horrific, that I really almost want to see that instead of Demi with Patrick Swayze. Almost. So, deadpan listeners, you're definitely familiar with my next guest. She's often called the most talented female guitarist ever, but she's really one of the most talented guitar players I've ever seen. You may recognize her from her days with Michael Jackson, or even her solo work, or her work with tons of other amazing musicians. I want to welcome Jennifer Batten to the Deadpan. Thank you for being on, Jennifer.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
So, well, what I usually do is I usually talk to people just kind of about their past, present, and future. Like I said, people probably know you best for your stint with Michael Jackson, but obviously that's not the only thing that you've ever done or accomplished. So let's, tell as much of your history as you want.
Well, let's see, when I was 2 years old.
Yeah, sure, that's good stuff, too.
Well, I started playing guitar when I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. I just had a guitar, and I didn't, and I was very jealous and let that be known. And my dad so generously gave me an electric guitar for my 8th birthday, and it was just a bomb, and I was hooked from there. And started taking lessons and took lessons from a bunch of different people over the years, and eventually went to the Guitar Institute of Technology in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest butt-kicking of my life so far. Very intense school where you live, eat, dream guitar for a year. And now the same course that I took has spread out over a year and a half instead of a year, which I think is smart because it was a little tough to keep up. But okay. Having said that, I don't think I would have gotten any of the gigs that I have gotten without that training. Okay. And went on in my late teens to play in a bunch of bands. And at the time I got the Michael Jackson gig in 87, I was in 6 different bands playing in Hollywood.
Wow.
Yeah, it was that's kind of the norm in that area, because everybody's, you know, playing in six bands doesn't mean that you're gigging six nights a week. It means most of the bands have a couple gigs a month.
Okay.
So get all the bands together and do enough work. And one of the Jacksons is, and the first tour was a year and a half long of Paradise. And treated so well. First-rate travel, first-rate hotels, and I was absolutely spoiled. I was just talking the other day to the other guitar player, John Clark, that was on the Michael Jackson tour with me, and he was saying, we paid our dues backwards. One of our first big gigs was, you know, traveling around the world first class. And, boy, you can get used to that in a hurry and the paychecks that come with it. And then eventually you get a dose of the real world and appreciate it even more, what you had.
I see. Well,
it was a party and a half.
I can't imagine. Now you've toured with other musicians, and now how did touring with Michael Jackson, was probably, you know, the biggest artist of in the world when you were with him, you know, touring, you know, looking out at seas of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. Well, how does that differ from, you know, other touring gigs you've had?
Well, the other biggest one was with Jeff Beck, and it was night and day different, from the music to the crew, et cetera. On the Jackson tour, there was 100 people that traveled from city to city. Just a massive crew of laser people, catering, hair people, costuming, and special effects, and bodyguards, the whole nine yards. We took up three hotels and had 26 semis to a Jeff Beck gig where there was 12 people total, six in the crew and four people in the band and two in management.
Okay.
And it was a lot more of a family atmosphere with Jeff, which I really dug. Plus, he's been my hero since I was a kid, so it was just a treat to get to know him and his personality, and to play with him every night was really, really inspiring. So it's, you know, I've had the best of both worlds. I can't complain.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, right, I mean, the chance Jeff Beck is so amazing, you know, any musician, any especially guitar player, that's like a dream come true. Now, what I wanted to ask is, with Michael Jackson, were you ever allowed to kind of unleash and show off your astounding skills, or was it more just play his songs?
Well, you know, I was the luckiest one in the band, because I was about the only one that got to take off. For a song like Beat It, I think it's a brilliant solo, and I wouldn't want to mess with it, so I just did what Eddie Van Halen did. But there was a couple other songs. I mean, I was with him for 10 years, so I ended up soloing on various songs on various tours. But I did get a chance to stretch out, which was really nice.
Okay, that's good.
But mostly, I mean, it's people generally want to hear the songs the way they were on the radio, because, you know, half the set were the top 10 songs, and people knew them by heart, every little stitch of them. So a lot of rehearsal had to do with getting the sounds together that were on the record and giving the people what they want. But having said that, he would stretch out some songs to add dance moves to them and stretch out my soloing on a few things, too.
Okay, that's good. And, wow, 100 people. Now, 50 of those were for your hair, weren't they?
There was one poor woman that had to deal with my hair, and poor me. It was 2.5 hours of hell every day for a show.
Wow.
I think I still have glue in my lungs from the hairspray.
Now, all right, as I've said, this is one of the world's best guitar players I'm talking to, so no more about hair, unless you have anything else you want to say, Jennifer.
Oh, the hair part's the funny part. And thank God that's over. I was glad to see the 80s go.
Now, your hair was a big standout, but I also remember just the finger tapping. It's just mind-boggling. I mean, you know, and I hate to flatter you too much. Well, I don't hate to flatter you too much, but, I mean, you are one of the most, if not the best at finger tapping I've ever seen. It's incredible what you did with Flight of the Bumblebee.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that was kind of like climbing Mount Olympus or something. It was it was there, so I climbed it. And I just wanted to attempt that because I can get so much more speed with tapping than using a pick in my right hand. Mm-hmm. So it worked out well. On the record, I ended up doing 200 beats a minute for that song, and there's no way in hell I could do that with a pick.
Yeah, really.
I'm kind of sorry I did that after all, because everywhere I go, it's requested, and I hate the work it takes to keep that up.
Then you are still able to do it just that fast, or I guess that's not the right way to word that. I mean, you still work out every day to maintain your speed, because that is blistering speed. I mean, that's.
Well, I do have my lazy periods now. I need to kick my own butt. But when I'm recording and stuff, sometimes I spend weeks just clicking the mouse and hardly picking up a guitar. So I'm really grateful for the live gigs I have, because that scares me into getting my chops back up.
Now, I mean, actually, I play music on my podcast, so I mean, a lot of people out there have heard me. But yeah, I am Grandpa in the slow lane. I mean, you know, you are definitely cruising past everyone in the Ferrari in the left lane. Now, you have lots of music out there, which I definitely want you to get the chance to plug it all. But, you know, I mean, your notable stuff was Flight of the Bumblebee. What you did with Michael Jackson, and also what got you noticed pretty famously was your cover of the Coltrane tune. You want to talk a little bit about that, how a guitar player came to choose a Coltrane song to cover like that?
Well, it was actually the influence of one of the teachers at the Guitar Institute, Joe DiOrio. I really got into jazz when I was in the school, and he taught a class on Charlie Parker and John Coltrane, and I really took it to heart and started listening to a lot of that stuff. And Giant Steps is another kind of Mount Olympus kind of tune with the chord changes in it. Mm-hmm. And when I was really working on getting my tapping together, I would take chord changes from jazz standards and just use them for a workout background. And Giant Steps seemed like the ultimate challenge. So what I did was work out a tapping solo that would work for that.
Okay.
And I used to terrorize myself with that at doing guitar clinics around the world. I would open with that song. And after doing that for years, I thought, why am I doing this to myself?
Right. I'm just
Your first tune should be a cruise so you can, you know, get used to the environment and then build up to that. But I didn't get that then.
Right. Let's start with Louie Louie. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Or Wipeout or something.
So then you just talked about the teaching. Now, do you still ever do teaching, or when is the last time? And if not, is that something you think you'd like to go back to?
I don't really enjoy it anymore. I did so much of it. At one point, I was doing 7 days a week when I was in L.A., and I think I pretty much burnt out on it. And I found that by doing it that much, I would come home from teaching all day, and I'd have absolutely no interest in picking up the guitar. So that's kind of detrimental to creativity, I found.
Sure.
So as close as I get to teaching is doing guitar clinics, which I really enjoy doing, because it's not one-on-one. It's like doing a group concert to backing tracks and having questions in between.
Okay.
The song.
So that's the type of thing that you're likely to do again, then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got some stuff coming up in Montreal in July, and then I'll be going to Japan in August and UK in September.
Okay. Now, I've noticed, you know, just tracking your career a little bit, you do seem to be quite the globetrotter. Is that a...
Oh, yeah, it's nuts. I'm kind of burnt on travel, too, but I can't get everybody to come to my house, so I got to go to them. Yeah, you know, since 9/11, travel has been especially a drag, going through the metal detector and have to take off your shoes because of one idiot shoe bomber.
Right.
And, it's just a hassle. Plus, I don't think being a mile high for 10 hours is very good for your body, and changing time zones all the time is really rough on my body, I've noticed.
Yeah, and the person sitting next to you on the plane gets really annoyed when you bust out the guitar and start going through scales.
Yeah.
You know, it's cramped enough.
I just say thank God for computers now, because it keeps me relatively sane when I'm touring. Got a lot of fun software programs to play with.
Okay. Actually, I guess you could edit. I don't know if your laptop has the power, but I guess you could do some music editing on the plane, right?
I could, but I'm not set up to do that.
Okay.
I got into doing art glass last year, and I got a cool design program called Glass Eye. So I design things when I'm on the plane and away from home. And then when I come home, I cut glass and stick it in the kiln and fuse it.
That's cool. And actually, what if someone wanted to buy one of those glass pieces?
You just go to the website and email me.
Okay.
Pretty easy. PayPal friendly.
Okay, good. Well, see, I'm helping you plug all of your work here.
I appreciate that.
But speaking of plugging your work, let's talk about now this year you mentioned you have some clinics coming up all over the world, but you also have an album release coming out in 2006.
Yeah, I've been working on this forever. It's some of the songs were stuff that I started for Jeff Beck when I joined him.
Okay.
And stuff that didn't make the record, I just developed it and turned it into my own. So it's been a long time coming, and this is the first album that I've done pretty much all myself, done all the programming and guitar synthesizer and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And it's very different from stuff that I've done in the past. Almost every song has vocal samples, and it's actually kind of a comedy record. I have, for instance, there's one track called Ass Whoopin'.
All right.
That I sampled the other guitar player, John Clark, from the Michael Jackson tour.
Okay.
And he is just a riot, just a crack up, and I just had him go off on a few rants and grabbed my favorite parts and made a track out of it. And very, very different. It's almost like the guitar almost takes a second seat to the focus, which is the story that the samples tell.
Okay.
So there's still plenty of guitar in it.
Now, when you say vocal, so there isn't like a vocal, you don't have a vocalist come in and sing. You're talking about just vocal samples kind of coming together, and that's how the vocals are then instead?
Yeah, most of them are talking vocals. I did have one singer come in, but there's no words. I just had a riff. So it kind of goes back and forth, the question and answer between guitar and the vocal riffing.
Okay. That sounds cool.
I don't pay attention to singing lyrics much. I'm kind of off in another world. And I was really influenced when I was with Jeff Beck for 3 years. He turned me on to techno music and electronica and stuff, and it just turned my head around and really updated the clock, so to speak. And I've been listening to a lot of that kind of stuff, and I find it really exciting and adventurous. There's new music forms other than verse, chorus. It's
right.
Themes that morph into other themes, and it sparked my creativity.
Okay, so then it definitely sounds like you would probably say that you're, as a songwriter, then this is your most adventurous and where you've stretched out the most.
Yeah, stretched out creatively, but the solos are shorter.
Okay.
So I got. It's funny how one review can change your whole focus. One of the reviews on my last record said it was whining that the solos were too long, and most of them were about 32 bars. And
okay.
At least it put me in good company, because it said, "Yeah, that's the problem I find with Vai and Satriani too." I thought, "Well, okay, I'm in good company for that, but I'll shorten things up and make it more concise for the next record."
I say, well, yeah, right. I mean, say, oh, you know, she sounds just like Satriani and Vai. Like, all right, well, I'm there then. You know, that sounds great to me.
Yeah, that's. I take it as a compliment. Those guys are smoking.
I don't know if Satriani's ever going to do a G3 tour again. Is there ever going to be a chance that that you'll make an appearance and something like that?
Never say never. That's my new motto.
Yeah, that's good. You know what, and actually, I'm kind of jumping around a bit, but I wanted to ask on the new record, do you still have the unplug this attitude?
Yeah, I still do, actually. I don't have any acoustic songs on the new record. I do have a ballad, though, which is a big step for me.
Okay.
Usually I drink too much caffeine to slow down to do a ballad, but I wrote a ballad for Jeff, and ultimately it came so close to making his last record, and ultimately I'm glad it didn't, because I'm really happy with it, and I want it for me.
It wasn't my fault. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake. A terrible flood! Locust! It wasn't my fault, I swear to God!
Community, a poem by Mark Forman. Community, a gathering of people. Crowd of magpies on a steeple. Communication, a sharing of information. Lack of causes litigation. Cooperation, a bridling of energies, hoping for expanded synergies. Conspiracy, of whispers and knowing glances, a subterfuge for romances. Concert, a blend of sound and voice. Symphony, when realize we rejoice. Conversation, flowing through dialogue, rings illumination of demagogue. Coalescing through thoughts and ideas, visions cause hope, scattering fears. Collage, random colors, varied shapes, merge into synaptic escapes.
Is there going to be a tour to back up this new album?
I'm actually planning a wacky kind of tour. Touring can be so expensive, it can wipe you out in a week. And so I've come to the conclusion that I would like to do an oddball kind of thing and go out by myself with backing tracks and also do multimedia. So I'm getting some students from various film schools around the planet to do films for each song. So I'll play along and be in sync with the films so people have more to watch than just me standing there with a guitar. And also bring my glass along for a backdrop and just have a multimedia.
Well, or
eye candy and ear candy.
That sounds really cool. That will definitely be like the Jennifer Batten experience, and then with no band at all, just you and your music.
Yeah, and you know, I saw Steve Vai the first time I saw him. He played at the NAMM show, and he was by himself playing the backing tracks, and I thought it was fantastic. There were some people that complained afterwards, oh, I wish there was a bass player. But honestly, I didn't miss it because I thought it was it just sounded great, and I didn't miss watching other people. I mean, a two-hour show might be a bit much, but I think I could get away with an hour or so.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people can pull it off. I think, you know, Vi can certainly pull it off. I think, you know, you could pull that off. I think that would be a cool thing. And you know, best of luck with that. And that's going to come through Phoenix, right?
It'll come through anybody who will have me.
All right. Well, we'll have to make sure that it comes through Phoenix. And, you know, you definitely would be welcome here to come in through with that show.
Well, thanks. I'll try to make it in the fall where it's not 124 degrees.
You don't want to pass out on stage, right?
Man, I have a very vivid memory of playing with a cover band there many years ago over the July 4th weekend, and I have never worn shorts on stage, but I sure did that night.
Yeah, it's brutal. Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, but yeah, I bust out the shorts when it gets to be 120 degrees. That's pretty rough. Now, you mentioned that about how Vi played with no one, but I saw somewhere that in an interview you said you really admire players who can play other stuff. You know, not they aren't just on one instrument. Now, do you play anything else, or are you still just focused on the guitar?
The guitar is enough for a lifetime. I recently, last week, bought a lap steel, which is, although it's six strings and tuned the same, it's like playing a whole new instrument. So I've become really enamored with Hawaiian music, and so that's that's my newest quest. And I would love to break up my solo set doing something like that. It would just be so out of left field. I think it would be like ginger for sushi.
Yeah, that would definitely sound. No, you're doing that because Don Ho makes a cameo on your next album, right?
You know, I did see Don Ho a few years ago, and. He used a teleprompter for every song, including Tiny Bubbles.
Okay.
You know, I don't think there's... I don't know. It's just like Wayne Newton. When you go to Vegas, you got to see him once.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, right. If you go to Hawaii, right, you can't. But at the teleprompter, wow, you've shattered all my illusions.
Sorry.
But I guess there goes another perk of playing, you know, predominantly instrumental music. As you know, no need for that stuff.
Yeah, the singer thing, boy, it's a whole other universe. I've played with enough singers to not want to again.
Well,
but I do have a whole new appreciation for them, because on the last Jeff Beck tour, I volunteered to sing one of the songs that was on his newest record, just because there's a company in Canada that came out with a vocal processor that not only would make sure you're in tune, but you could choose to have a raspy sound or choose whatever vibrato you wanted. It sounded like the killer thing to have, like anybody could sing. And So I went over for rehearsals, and this machine was not ready. I ended up singing myself, and I haven't done that since I was 18. And some nights it came out just fine, and other nights I would hear tapes back, and man, I was like sharp the whole song and didn't know it. I knew something wasn't right, but I couldn't fix it. And it really gave me a whole new appreciation for singers, because with guitar players, if you can't hear yourself well, at least you have frets to rely on.
Right.
But singers don't have anything. You gotta kind of sing by braille if the sound is too wacky.
Yeah, actually, that is a good point. But yeah, I mean, that's funny. It is still funny that you bring that up, though. I mean, the famous friction between the guitar player and singer, you know, I mean, that Eddie Van Halen has complained for years about all of his various singers.
Yeah, I think every big band that you talk to has got that. I mean, even Mick and Keith can't stand each other, and that's why Ron Wood's in the band, because he's the mediator. And that's why Joe Walsh is in the Eagles, because he's got such a great sense of humor. It just eases the tension. So that chemistry works again.
That's true. So, all right. Well, I think we've plugged just about everything. I mean, we've plugged. Go ahead and plug some of your older stuff too. Tell us how to get a hold of. You know, we talked about your older songs and stuff. Tell us how to get a hold of all that stuff.
Guitar9.com has my last record. If you want to do the credit card thing, I also have both of my records are available from my site. But once the new record is released, it's going to be on Steve Vai's label, and he will then re-release my first two records as a double CD.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So for now, either Guitar 9 or my site. And my first album is out of print, but I'm burning copies for anybody that wants them.
Oh, well, cool. But that will soon be available. And that's Favored Nations is Steve Vai's label. Okay. So we'll be able to get the first two as a double from him by the end of the year then.
Yep, I'm fingers crossed, man. I need to. I feel like I've been pregnant for 10 years. This record needs to get out.
Don't keep your fingers crossed too. It's going to be hard to do finger tapping with your fingers crossed.
Yeah, I might give that a try.
Actually, yeah, that would be a cool stage trick. Well, thank you very, very much for your time. And you know, like I said, feel free. You still have time to plug away at anything else you want. But otherwise, you know, thank you so much for being on. Best of luck. I definitely hope to see you come through either by yourself or with a band. I hope to see you come through Phoenix. Definitely love to see you live.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
But that's not the end of the interview. Like the professional musician that she is, Jennifer Batten came back and did an encore for one more question. Oh, you know, I guess I didn't touch on your unique experience as a woman in the biz.
Boy, it's been very interesting. I will say there's still a major prejudice. It's playing guitar is still very much a boys' club, especially rock guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, I've been really lucky with the gigs that I've gotten. You know, I've not gotten gigs because I'm female, but I've gotten the best gigs in the world. So I don't have much bitching to say about that.
All right. Well, then your image has changed over the years too, with your image and your music. I mean, it seems like you've really done a good job of still keeping, you know, the feminine touch to it. you know, it doesn't sound like you're just the girl playing in the boys' sandbox. You know, I think you've carved out your own feminine identity, and I think you've done a really great job. And I hope, I have no doubt, actually, that you've inspired a lot of girls to pick up guitar and follow in your footsteps.
I hope so. When I was doing interviews 15 years ago, I would tell people, just 10 years from now, there's going to be a lot more women playing. And boy, there's not. I mean, there are women out there. And in fact, one of the last CDs that I appeared on was called La Guitarra. And it's 14 women guitar players that are great, that run the gamut from Kaki King, kind of a Michael Hedges sound, to Muriel Anderson. There's some really monstrous players there. But obviously, compared to how many men are out there, we need some help.
Yeah, I'll tell you a story which will probably make you cringe. But I remember a musician friend of mine, we were talking about just how great Bonnie Raitt is. And, you know, you don't really hear it because she's a pop singer, but she's an incredible guitar player. And I remember my friend saying, like, yeah, you know, she plays like a man. And
I've heard things like that. I remember a surfer came up to me after a gig when I was in the top 40 band and said, "You play just like a boy." I thought, like, "What the hell?"
Jeez.
But I understand the energy that's behind that, even if it comes out really ignorant. It was given as a compliment, so I took it as such.
Yeah. Well, I think you've done a hell of a lot to sort of hopefully kind of put that in the past and have people just, you know, respect all players just for their pure ability.
Well, thank you.
Spherical Tomy by Jack Mangan.
Distant explosions dotted incessantly across the screen of stars.
The samurai is dead. Tomy was once one of the foremost combat programmers in the universe. Now her time is running out. She occupies a deteriorating clone body on the satellite, right in the middle of a conflict between warlords. One, her former shogun. The other, the murderer of her samurai. Spherical Tomy is an action-packed tale of deception, revenge, redemption, fragmented identity, and the limitations of the human and artificial mind. Subscribe at patiobooks.com and see what made Spherical Tomy the number one patio book.
Tomitsu, is it really you in there?
In the flesh.
And now, silliness.
Tomitsu, is it really you in there? In the flesh.
Gosh, was your wedding 3 years ago? When are you two going to start a family?
You know we're not really kid people.
It's different when they're your own.
Beep. Oh, that's my other line. Gotta go. Beep.
Hello, do you have 5 minutes to take a brief survey of daycare and other women's issues?
No, thanks.
Do you plan not to be a parent? Sick of hearing that you'll change your mind someday?
Then you should listen to the Adult Space Child-Free podcast at www.gettingby.net, where I discuss child-free news and social issues. I also rant against excessive Disneyfication and child-proofing of parts of the world that aren't specifically child spaces, and the resulting effects on free speech and general good manners. Every show ends with the happy things, just to keep it balanced. Again, the Adult Space Child-Free Podcast at www.gettingby.net.
That, of course, was the lovely and talented Chris Fisher. And next week, either on the website or in the podcast, there will be a cool Chris Fisher / Deadpan related announcement, which it's too soon to say right here. Although I think we will have to get her out of the ball pit at the McDonald's Playland first. Okay, well, I hope she's still a friend of the show after this. So all right, all you deadpanites and all you ignorant simps, I want to thank everyone who contributed this week. And I want to thank Jennifer Batten for being on. And I want to thank you very much for listening. I guess there haven't been that many changes, but hey, the show's evolving. Feel free to leave voicemails, 206-350-TOMY, 206-350-8664. Feel free to donate via PayPal on the website. And you might have noticed that you can post comments on the website. Go ahead and do that. Don't be shy. And I hope you'll be back to listen to Deadpan number 12. And we're going to leave off with the song called Asteroid Speed Highway. This is one of the original jams that Matt Mango and Steve Fernandez and I used to do back in his basement back in the day. And he'd always had this title for it. But when it came time to add some vocals, he kind of, you know, talked to me about it and said, hey, you want to do the lyrics? So the lyrics on the first two verses of this are mine. Now, I also remember when we took this into the studio to record it. And our studio guy is a guy named Jerry, who's, you know, a product of the 60s and just brilliant in the studio. But, you know, that was his music. And I just remember when we said, hey, you know, this one we're going to do has a rap in it. I just remember the look on his face was like, and his reaction was, oh, great. But you know what? At the end, when we were done recording, he asked for a copy of the song for himself. So we may have done something right. Personally, I am pretty damn happy with this one. And hey, Duel of the Fates listeners may actually recognize about 8 seconds right in the middle there. So in the words of the legendary filmmaker Marty DeBerge, enough of my yakking. I give you Asteroid Speed Highway. Oh wait, that's not it. Here it is.
Shadow, the solar winds, the ashes scatter, hoping you're centered, as it guides you on your course.
813 posts.